I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Breaking up is never easy, but if it meant more cash in your wallet, would you do it? The smart money experts say breaking up with your bad fiscal habits can go a long way towards achieving your monetary goals. Today, we'll walk you through how to say goodbye to things that are detrimental to your wealth health. If you're the victim of financial procrastination or inertia, we've got tips for getting and staying on the path to budgetary responsibility. Wondering how you'll ever save enough for your kids' college fund? Let the smart money experts break it down. All that and a look at the latest happenings in the world of finance as we get you up to date after this hour's news. You may not want to hear this, but maybe you should. When it comes to money, too often bad habits tend to follow. You need to save more in your 401k, but you haven't done it. You need to file your taxes, but you haven't done that either. You need to talk to your spouse about managing expenses and maybe cutting out a subscription or two, but you haven't done that as well. Now a conversation about how to get on top of that stuff and some counsel later on today about investing in the stock market. With us, David Jackson is a certified financial planner, practitioner, and financial advisor for Waddell & Reed Financial Advisors. David, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Sandy Weaver is a CPA, a certified financial planner certificate with Petrovic Weaver Financial Services. Sandy, good morning to you.
Nice to see you, Steve.
Barbara McMahon is president of Innovest Financial Partners in Brookside. Barbara, nice to have you.
Good morning.
Well, good to have you all here. Let's start, as we always do, with a quick update on the latest financial news. Bitcoin is back in the news, Sandy. What's going on there?
Well, it's dropped quite a bit from mid-December. In fact, it's dropped about 50% of its value, so much for being a good currency. It's down around $10,999.
And people say if you don't understand something, don't invest in it, and this might be one of those things.
Absolutely. There have been some institutions putting some restrictions on its buy and sell for its customers, too.
Dave, are you surprised by the drop in Bitcoin?
Actually, no. It was one of those things that went up way too fast, it seemed like. And, you know, what goes up must come down. I had a interesting conversation with a gentleman who he was an ex-client of mine. He called me back in mid-December asking if I did anything with Bitcoin because he and his wife wanted to go all in. So he was ready to go all in at the peak. And then since the peak, like Aunt Sandy said, it's down about 50%. So it's like you got to be careful.
Barbara, is this like the rest of the market? Should people just ride it out, or would you advise otherwise?
You know, I'll be honest, I don't know enough about Bitcoin to even have an opinion about
that's the issue.
But
yeah.
I would say, no, it is not like the rest of the market. The rest of the market, there are standards, there are laws, there is support from the federal government. The Bitcoin has none of that. It's just traded on fear and euphoria and what somebody thinks its value is that day. The value of Bitcoin, as I understand it, and that's pretty limited, is the technology. Eventually, that technology not having to produce a check or a credit card or some kind of physical piece of currency will be very, very valuable, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation that cryptocurrency or this blockchain technology will be something of the future, but it's kind of like the early days of the internet. You know, you could kind of see the internet would work. You didn't know what company was going to be the one that profited off the internet most successfully. And we're kind of in that space right now with Bitcoin and all these other companies. You know?
Okay, another news nugget here. Your paycheck likely is increased. Sandy, what's happened with that?
Well, and I noticed it on my last paycheck, too. That's because we have lower tax rates because of the Trump tax bill passing. We have higher standard deductions, which most taxpayers will be able to take advantage of.
Okay.
And that went into effect, you know, middle of February.
So if you get paid once a month, you should see something for the last couple of weeks. You get paid biweekly. Something should be happening pretty soon here, right?
Right.
How many workers are affected by this, David?
It's going to be a large percentage of people, close to 90%. But I don't know if you saw the piece in the news where a lady posted online that she saw her paycheck went up by $1.50. And then Paul Ryan commented on that, that, oh, that shows that it works. I mean, so he was like, he thought $1.50 was a lot of money. But yeah. So most people will get some kind of a pay raise. It's going to be vary from person to person how big that pay raise is going to be. But you will see a little bit more in your paycheck.
If you get something that's worth something, Barbara, what would you do with that money?
Oh, you should probably save it or pay off a debt. Yeah. I think, but I want to
spoken like a true financial advisor.
Thank you, Steve.
Not going to go out and have fun here, right? We're going to do something responsible here.
We do not allow fun, but yeah. I want to throw out a caution there. I hate to throw cold water on this because more money is always nice, but the IRS doesn't put out its new withholding calculators until the end of February. W-4s don't come out until 2019, and so what we've been advising our clients to do is go back and fill out a new W-4 because our concern is you're going to have not enough money withheld from your paycheck and you're going to have a huge, not huge, but a larger than normal tax liability come time to pay next year.
Why a liability?
Because usually W-4s, you start a job, you fill it out, you never change it.
Right.
It's time to look at those because we're not sure. The IRS hasn't set up its standards. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like. And so what we would like for people to do is when they finally come up with this in March, just do it again. Just be cautious about that.
There's a lot of people who don't have the foggiest idea what to do with those W-4s, how much withheld. And so what should they do?
You know, I
often, because the company always says, well, I can't advise you on that. You know, that's not my thing.
Well, and sadly, what we usually do is ask people to sit down with their tax preparer and figure out, or we will look at it and say, what did you pay in taxes? Now, please go to your human resource department and say, I need to have so much more or less taken out each year to hit this number. And usually human resources can do it. And Sandy, you may be able to help here. Didn't it not used to have on the IRS website a calculator, which I don't think would be valid right now, but I've used that one before, but it's been many years.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Okay. We usually advise clients to get to the safe harbor level, which is you have to pay in during the year, either through withholding or estimated tax payments, 100% of the prior year's tax bill.
Mm. Right. That's the minimum you have to do, you're saying.
Yeah, if you want to avoid penalty.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Maybe a final news thing right now. There's a new chairman at the Federal Reserve, David, and this is always a significant development.
Yes, it is. I think one of the good things, though, a lot of people think that he's going to continue a lot of the policies that Janet Yellen proposed and supported. And so we're not expecting a lot of changes as far as the Federal Reserve. It was kind of disappointing that Janet Yellen didn't get reauthorized to do another four-year stint because that's pretty traditional with Fed chairs. But
why wasn't she reauthorized?
Trump just wanted a Republican, you know, and I guess he felt like they would be a little bit more friendly to what type of policies he's hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
But from what everything I've heard about Jerome Powell, he's going to be really similar to Janet Yellen as far as overall policies. But that's still indicates we're going to probably see some rate increases going forward. You know, a lot of people are expecting maybe three, maybe four more rate increases from the Fed this year.
And long story short, that's why the market has been as volatile as it's been lately, because of this expectation that interest rates are going up. That always undermines the market.
Yeah, I hate to put too much time into this, but it gets kind of interesting. So we got a report that came out at the end of January showing that consumer wages actually went up a lot more than anybody expected, which is actually a good thing. And we've been hoping for that for a long time. But because it went up so much, it created that fear that the Fed is going to have to raise interest rates higher and more quickly than they anticipated to keep inflation in check. So that's what created all the volatility, that the Fed's reaction is going to be a little bit more so than what people were originally anticipating. So it's like it was good news, but it had kind of negative effects just because of what people are thinking going forward.
Anything else about Jerome Powell we should be aware of?
I've read that he is slightly more aggressive than Janet Yellen.
More aggressive?
Yes. Yeah.
And that might mean what?
More increases in interest rates, perhaps a little bit, you know, maybe four more than three.
Which is interesting because Trump was nominating him because he'd be friendly to real estate, which is keeping interest rates low. So it was kind of interesting if he does turn out to be more hawkish than Yellen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's turn to our one of our main topics today. This is bad financial habits. They can wind up undercutting our personal happiness and even prevent us from achieving the things we want to in life. So let's talk about these bad financial habits that we commonly see and how people can overcome them. Barbara, one of them is procrastination on key financial tasks like doing your taxes, saving more money, managing expenses. That's maybe not too surprising to a lot of people.
It is not too surprising. People are, in many cases, motivated by inertia. You know, it feels good. We've always done it this way. And they just don't move forward on things that matter. So you have to convince yourself that it matters before you will move forward. And one way to do that is to write down why you are doing it. Why is it important? And I found it helpful for some people to draw a line, a vertical line down the middle of a page of paper and do pros and cons. Why do I need to do this? What do I lose? I lose $50 a month or $100 a month or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if the pros stack up higher than the cons, you've pretty much made the decision. Hopefully, by the time you're done with that exercise, you have talked yourself into the merit of saving or, well, the benefit of taxes is you may get a refund more quickly if, in fact, you plan for that.
A great example might be this new change in the federal tax laws. If you're getting more money in your paycheck, if you're a good financial advisor, you're going to be responsible here. You would advise people do something worthy with that money.
Absolutely, yes. You know, save part of it. Maybe not take all the fun out of it, but save 2/3 of it and then spend 1/3. But, you know, find ways to make yourself do things that move you forward.
Mm-hmm. David, goal setting, as Barbara is suggesting, becomes pretty important here.
I mean, that's really the key because what's that expression? If you don't know where you're going, any road to take you there. So, you know, once you've actually written down what you're trying to accomplish, then it'll force your subconscious to make you work towards those things. But a lot of people never even want to go through that. And so when Barbara talks about procrastination, that's why it's so easy to procrastinate. It's like, well, I really don't know what I'm trying to accomplish. So what's my hurry to do it? And that's the biggest drawback that people have.
So one reason people procrastinate is that they know by doing so they're avoiding seeing their paycheck shrink because they know they have to save more money or pay more in their mortgage to draw it down.
But see, that's the misconception because their paycheck is not shrinking and they're actually putting money towards what's important to them as opposed to just frivolously letting it go away. But until you actually write down, okay, this is what's really important to me, this is what I'm really trying to accomplish, you won't do those things, but it's not like you're keeping yourself from doing anything. It's almost like, you know, when you think about dieting, it's not necessarily eating less, it's eating better, which means you're not denying your body food and nourishment. You're just putting the right type of nourishment inside you. You know, dealing with your finances is kind of the same way. It's putting your money where what's important to you.
Barbara, I'm just wondering how often people are just overwhelmed by all of this because, you know, you're a young parent, you're trying to deal with a new mortgage, you got kids, and you're trying to save these astronomical sums required to put your kids through school these days, and you've got to overcome that as a financial advisor.
Oh, you absolutely do. I like to joke that many of our clients want to retire and educate their children and all in the same lifetime, and that becomes the challenge. And so you have to segregate, first of all. You have to prioritize what's really important. If I have a client come in, for example, and say, I want to put as much as I possibly can save into an education fund for a child, I would like to remind them that nobody gives a scholarship for retirement. Mm-hmm. And so one of our jobs, I think, is to help people reprioritize and help them focus. But you're going to have to take it out in bite. It's like the elephant in the room. How do you eat an elephant? You have to do it a bite at a time. You start with a little. And to David's point about, you know, being overwhelming, you have to change your focus. You don't focus on what you've lost in your paycheck. You start to look at, oh my gosh, look at how much I have in my 401k.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Look at how many years of tuition I can pay for my daughter. Mm-hmm. So it's a shift in focus. It's not that you don't get to spend the money. It's just you spend it later.
A lot of times, Cindy, though, emotion gets in the way, and that's something else I imagine you have to deal with often.
Yes, it does. And that's why putting things on autopilot so that you don't notice them, and to David's point that you're gratified by some of the decisions, or Barbara mentioned you get to spend it later. But putting things on autopilot and rewarding yourself for doing so, or making small rewards, you know, helps a great deal. You don't want to have to make decisions all the time. You know, every meal you don't want to choose between ice cream and a salad. You just want to make it automatic that you're going to choose the salad. Just have the salad there.
So if you don't have enough money to save and invest, then, David, where are you? Because a lot of people listening have that concern. Yeah, Sandy?
I think some of the important things are make sure that you avoid debt. If you don't have enough to save, let's say that you both are at minimum wage jobs. So it's very hard to even survive. So sometimes it's maybe not being able to save enough. Maybe it's just being able to get to full retirement age and getting to Social Security. So maybe that maybe some of the goals you make those smaller and more realistic is let's not, you know, get to age 67 and have mountains of debt. You know, so we frame it so it's realistic for where you are at your level.
Because at that point, if you're making an income that's that small, debt can be extraordinarily challenging.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
Okay.
So one of the interesting things I learned doing some traveling in Europe is that in Europe, kids will stay at home until they're 30, 35, 40, and sharing, you know, those expenses with their parents, where in America, we've always taken the attitude that as soon as you're grown, you go out on your own.
You're buckling my knees here.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not
my
telling
kids
you.
In my house till 40, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. Do you know what you're talking about?
I'm not recommending that, but I am saying sometimes you have to make some tough choices. Instead of maybe having a big house, you have a small house, or maybe you get a roommate who's going to help you with the rent. You know, so if you're on a limited income, you have to start thinking strategically of, well, how can I stretch the dollars that I have? And I think we were talking before we came on about how the pressure is so great that comparing yourself with other people and saying, well, I've got to live like them, I've got to have the new car like them, or I have to have the new phone like them. And sometimes you just don't have the money, and you just have to, you know, force yourself to look where you are and make strategic decisions, you know.
And for a lot of people, that's really hard stuff.
I know.
They get to be adults. They want the nice car. They want the nice house. And you got to break down a lot of barriers there.
And the biggest thing you can do for yourself is write it down. Okay, say, oh, okay, I got X number of dollars coming in after taxes. I got these bills. How much do I have left? What I want to do with that I have left? What other people tend to do is just whatever money that I got to work with, I'm going to spend it until I don't have it. And then if I really want something, then I'm going to charge it. You know, that's not the way to get ahead.
What are we seeing with charging and taking on credit card debt?
It's going back up.
Is it going back up again?
Yeah, after 2008, people were like, okay, let's get this debt under control.
That was the big thing, consolidating debt, paying it down for a while, and people saw the wisdom of that.
Yeah, people are feeling good about the economy now, and they're like, okay, let's charge it up. So it's going to fall back in that same problem.
Yikes. Barbara?
And it's also useful to have a partner. I mean, you've heard of a workout partner. You know, you meet them every day, you walk, you go to the gym. If you were married or in a committed relationship, you already have that partner. You should be sharing with them. You should be making decisions together, deciding on the amounts, deciding on the goals. And so I think a commitment to somebody else always makes it a little more real, because that person is going to hold you to the commitment, and that can be a really good way to accomplish something.
And having some fun along the way by rewarding yourself might be something too, Sandy, because that's been recommended as well.
Right. Once you reach a milestone, then have certain rewards for yourselves that, you know, you'll both go out to dinner. But remember, again, it doesn't have to be Ruth Chris Steakhouse. It can be that funky little restaurant that, you know, that dive you've always been meaning to find out.
I still remember the steak I had at Ruth Chris Steakhouse. It was like 10 years ago, and I still haven't forgotten.
That was that good, huh?
Yeah, it was that good. I don't do a lot of steak, but that steak, yeah.
But lots of times people think that in order to reward yourself, it means that you have to spend a lot of money. There's not a high correlation between, you know, happiness or rewarding yourself and money. You know, you put that there if it's there.
How about the whole notion of financial inertia, the whole idea of not paying attention to reoccurring financial transactions. You know, a lot of people, and this I fall into this category, more and more of my payments are automatically being deducted from my checking account each month, and pretty soon you're looking at it going, man, where is it going, David?
No, that is so true, and it's kind of interesting. So Sandy was recommending a really good habit of making things automatic, except that you can put too many things on autopilot and then forget about them. So it's a really good idea once a year at least to review all those little things that are set up automatically and see, do you still need them or not? Because it does add up. I mean, $10 here, $20 there.
They're all innocuous amounts of money, but then you're right. You add them up and it's something else.
Like, whoa,
the difference, yeah. How about home and auto insurance, Barbara?
I would say you should probably shop for that every 3 years because it creeps and it's often something that you can get less expensively. You should be looking at the deductibles. You should be looking at the liability levels, too, because those change. It may be that you need more insurance, but it's better to know that before than after you have an auto accident.
Is it a hassle to go out and shop that stuff around,
Absolutely.
Though, because you got to calculate, okay, here's what this car's policy is, here's what this car's policy is, here's what my homeowner's is, and that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And Sandy, you may have a tip to make it easier, but I think it's an effort that's well worthwhile.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's a lot of work. The annual statement that you get usually has all the parameters that you're insured for, the deductibles and the amounts, and you fax those over to, another insurer or broker and say, shop me around, see what you can find.
I had a good friend that did that.
Where do you find an insurance broker? Where do you go to get that? Who do you call?
You can Google for that, insurance broker, insurance agency brokers, and they will shop you around to, 3 to 6 to 8 different insurance companies. Whereas a captive agent like State Farm, Farmers, American Family, they're only going to give you quotes from one insurance company, one they're with. But so usually having a nice mix of brokers and a couple of captive agents, fax those and it's the same set of faxes.
Yeah, I was going to use the example of my brother-in-law. I was talking to him over the weekend, and he was talking about the commercial with the lady with the gun. I can't even think of the company. But he said he's been with the same insurer for about 20 years, decided to shop his insurance out for his auto insurance. And because over the years, it just kept creeping up. He's saving $1,000 a year and for the exact same coverage. Mm-hmm. It's just because it kind of crept, and he hadn't shopped it around at all. So it is worth it.
And Sandy mentions captive agents. And if you're with one of these captive agents, they will look at the product that they have to offer. But that doesn't mean you can't challenge them and question them. Do I have enough liability? Is it too much? Would I save some money if I raised my deductible? So you need to be willing to push back a little bit and not just fax it to them and see what they get back. Look at the numbers and go, is that valid? Is that realistic?
Explain what this notion of a captive agent is, Barbara.
A captive agent is somebody who sells only those products of the insurance company for which they work. So State Farm. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to call a State Farm agent and expect to get a wide variety of different types of insurance like you would if you called an independent agent who has many different types of insurance at their disposal.
Yeah. Starbucks runs, Sandy.
that's another
one. Daily $3, $4 thing.
Right. Yeah. That can mount up quite a bit.
God, what a business that is.
Yes, it is.
Every time you drive by one, there's a line out to the street.
And, if you're like me and you don't make coffee at home, you can still go through McDonald's. You can still run in a Quick Trip. I like their coffees just as well as Starbucks. I like them.
Man, if you're a smoker, how much you spend per week or per month if you're a smoker, the way prices have gone up.
Okay, so the average cup of Starbucks coffee over 4 weeks, I just calculated this, $90 a month.
Yeah.
Wow.
$90
a
month.
That's a budget item all of a sudden, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here about breaking up with some bad financial habits. And later on this hour, we'll talk about the stock market and whether you should fall in love with it these days or maybe be thinking about a breakup. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Friday on the show, members of the Kansas City Council joined us for an update on the goings-on in Kansas City. We talked airport updates, downtown development, and public safety funding. You can listen to that conversation and others. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, what does it take to fall in love with the place where you live? We'll talk about what makes a city emotionally engaging. Then we'll hear one man's tales about the highs and lows of growing up in western Kansas. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, this hour, we're visiting with our smart money experts talking about this idea of how to break some bad financial habits. We'll be talking about the stock market in just a few minutes. We're visiting with David Jackson from Waddell & Reed, Sandy Weaver with Petrovic Weaver Financial Services, and Barbara McMahon from Innovest Financial Partners in Brookside. How about this idea, Sandy, of not saving enough money? And a lot of experts say the key there is to make saving automatic. Get it out of your hands. Make it an automatic thing you do every month.
Absolutely. Use direct deposit to your advantage. And again, it's making it easy for yourself. Don't choose every meal between ice cream and salad. Make the salad the automatic. So if you can have 10% of your paycheck sent to a second bucket, you don't even see that then, you know, so that gets saved. You can use behavioral finance to your advantage. So every time that you get a wage increase every year, you know, 50% of that goes to increased savings, 50% of that goes to increased spending. If you get a bonus at the end of the year, just automatically know you're going to save half of it, you're going to spend half of it. You know, use those, get those mindsets in place.
You know, discipline is a word, a theme that's coming up a lot here today. That's sort of the key to all of this, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But if you make it the automatic choice, you know, it's not all dreary and no fun. You know, it's just life.
This is an interesting idea, David, using multiple savings accounts for accounting purposes, an emergency fund, a vacation fund, a house fund. That's an interesting idea.
That's a really
good idea.
Are banks
okay with that?
Oh, yes. You can have as many accounts as you want. And it's really good from the standpoint of, let's just say, okay, I want an emergency fund of, let's just say, $5,000 or $10,000. I know in the future we're going to take a vacation that's going to cost about $5,000. And then, you know, you can just start saying, okay, this is my target for this piece of money. And then say, well, if I hit my target, I'm going to have to do X number of dollars per month. And you know what you're driving towards. Mm-hmm. That makes it so much easier than just saying, you know, your financial advisor says you should be saving 10% of your income or 20% of your income. No, it's for what? You know, mm-hmm. And if you can identify the for what, then actually doing it becomes so much easier because you can monitor your progress and see you're getting there.
If our listeners have some bad financial habits they want to talk to our experts about, 816-235-2888 is our number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. And Barbara, we've already mentioned this notion of don't run credit card balances because you're just putting yourself in a hole here.
This is where automatic hurts you. You know, you just whip it out and you pay, and it's just getting easier and easier. You don't even need the card. You can use your phone.
Well, it's insidious almost now.
It is. Yeah. And you mentioned how sometimes you look at your checking account and go, well, where did it all go? Here's what happens. You have to look at it. It does take some discipline. You should be going through that checking account and flagging things that perhaps you don't need or crept up on you. But the credit card balances are difficult to pay off, and you're just digging a hole. It prevents you from saving for those things that are important, that matter to you.
Yeah. Not paying attention to your investments, Sandy, what do you advise on that front?
Oh, that is so true and so easy to do, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are investing on your own, you should at least look at the research on the investments where you have money. You know, at least twice a year, use third-party research, something like Morningstar or ValueLine. You know, you can look online and get lots of good research these days, but you really do. Wherever you have your money, you need to check up on those. Those are like kids, you know. It's 10 at night, where are they?
And also targeting how much money you're saving, not just where it's going, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Would you hire an advisor?
Yes, of
yes,
course.
That's so self-serving.
What do you think
that,
right? I would say?
Yeah. But it can be helpful. An independent look at what you're doing might make sense at some point.
Yeah. Right. And lots of firms, let's say you are, you know, a do-it-yourself advisor, or excuse me, investor, but lots of bigger companies, you know, Vanguard, Fidelity, will have some kind of service that you can call in and get some advice. So maybe you make yourself call in once or twice a year and say, hey, take a look at my account. Will you help me take a walkthrough? What do you think of these? And, you know, use those free services that they offer.
Yeah, let me give you an example, Steve. I'm working with a person now who spent their career at General Motors, and all their contributions into their retirement plan was going into General Motors stock. I don't know if you remember, but back in 2008, 2009, General Motors stock went to zero. It got totally wiped out. And so all his savings up to that point went to zero. And now he's, you know, retirement age, and it's like all the stuff that I thought I'd saved, I don't have. So maybe if he had worked with an advisor or somebody, somebody would have said, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Diversify, spread out the risk.
Also, this notion these days, speaking of risk, of poor password management, the passwords you use to manage your various accounts, Barbara, what's the buzz on that front? What should you be doing?
Cyber theft is just getting more and more insidious. I know personally, I think I've been hit twice in the past 6 months.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I'm really, really cautious with what I do. So there's the old-fashioned
way. How did you know you were hit? What happened?
Equifax contacted me and said, you are within the group, you know, so lucky me. You can do an old-fashioned method of just keeping it on paper, putting it in a file. You know, don't put it out there on the web where they could steal that, or if somebody walked off with your laptop, it has everything in it. There are also password safes, but you don't want to use the same password for everything, because if they've got this one password, they've got the keys to the kingdom. They can try it here, they can try it there. The odds are very high that they can get into accounts, more than one account, if they have just this one number. And Sandy, I think you've got a couple good password safes that you recommend.
Yeah, RoboForm is one. KeePass, LastPass. Some of these are free. You don't have to pay for them.
So. Yeah. Do you pay for yours?
I do. It's $19.99 a year. Mm-hmm. And then it does the autofill. So when you go to your website, like to the bank, it will automatically fill it in for you.
So you don't have to be looking it up all the time.
Yeah. But I think even RoboForm, you know, it'll give you like up to 10 free passwords. And after that, you have to start paying. There's KeePass, I know, is free. So, you know, some of those are good enough that you don't need to pay if you don't want to.
What percentage of Americans use these password management systems?
You know, I don't know, but not enough. And obviously younger people do and older people don't.
Yeah. Another issue, David, poor or no communication with spouses when it comes to another bad habit that people should be thinking about messing around with here. What about poor communication with your spouse?
Oh, this could be tough.
Yeah, now you come into the marital counseling aspect
indeed.
Of what
sometimes
you do.
Sometimes we do some counseling when it comes to couples, too. So the traditional thing that we see frequently is one of the couples is the saver and one is the spender.
Yeah.
And that creates so much friction in a relationship, because the person who's the saver eventually becomes resentful of the person who's a spender.
Yeah.
And they may stop saving, saying, well, is he going to spend or she's going to spend all their money? Then I'll spend mine, too. And then they end up not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, you know, part of it is communication and part of it is having some common goals so that, you know, regardless of what you're doing, you're kind of working towards the same thing. I mean, it's easier said than done, and I'm not going to pretend I'm a marriage counselor, so I don't have the answer to it. So, but it is a problem.
But it gets sticky sometimes in your office,
right? Man, it
does.
It really can. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how do you handle those situations, Barbara?
You try to have both people at the meeting. That is really useful.
You get both sides of the issue here, right?
Right. And you try to understand where both people are coming from, because people make money decisions based on their childhood. I mean, how they grew up, how they have perceived money since they were very, very young. One of the terms that's come into favor recently is financial infidelity, which is not just not seeing the goals the same way, but one lying to another. And I can remember when I was a teenager, one of my friends, her mother used to buy brand new, stunning outfits and put them in the back of the closet.
Yeah, hide them for a while.
And then when her husband, she'd wear one and he'd say, that's very nice. Is this new? She'd go, oh, I've had this for months. And I thought, what a... Yeah, it was a flagrant lie, you know. But
it, no, it wasn't a lie. She'd had it for months.
It was, yes, it was
just hadn't worn it.
A certain brand of truthiness.
There you go, truthiness. That's a good word.
Sandy, not planning to die. Sometimes people don't want to believe that's even in the possibility here.
Oh, yes, we see this too. This is, they don't have beneficiary designations on their accounts. Mm-hmm. They don't have their estate planning documents done, so there's no will, no power of attorney in case they get incapacitated. Lots of times we will get people hire us because they're both older and they want to have somebody in place to take over some of the financial decisions. But even so, 10% of people age 65 and older have dementia. So if you have someone, you know, who...
10% 65.
Yeah, that's a frightening statistic.
Yeah.
Wow. So when it comes to managing your money, you know, you need to, if you don't have a financial advisor, then you need to have like a plan B in place with a relative or a trusted friend. You know, if you're, and obviously what Barbara mentioned before, at least bring your spouse up to date so that both of you are conversant on the finances.
I'm thinking going back to kind of part of our original conversation about procrastination, doing your estate planning and wills. That's one of the things you can procrastinate on forever. It's one of those things, one of these days I'll be old and I'll worry about it, but. No, it's something that, you know, could creep up on any of us at any time.
I just went through a death in my family, and I talked to my mother-in-law about getting a lot of that stuff taken care of, and she did. And I can't tell you how relieved I am now.
That's usually what it takes. You know, you see somebody else dealing with some issues, and it's like, okay, maybe I should go ahead and take care of this now.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to KCUR's Up to Date, and we're talking with our smart money experts who are in the house here, David Jackson, Sandy Weaver, Barbara McMahon. We're going to switch topics now and talk about the stock market, which has been very volatile of late. You know, many investors are euphoric about the strong run in stock prices of late, but this has left many people with regrets about not being invested in the fear of missing out should this great run continue. But should you actually consider investing more in stocks? Is now the right time to invest? That's the question on the table. Sandy, what do you make of all this? And one tip is don't love something that can't love you back. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's the stock market. It's easy to love a market that keeps going up and up and up like we've seen since 2008. But we've also just been reminded recently in the last couple of months that it can go the wrong way on you. And it's not always a winner's game. We just had a peak-to-trough correction of 11%. And, of course, it raced right back up. We've regained about two-thirds of that. So stock market is up about 2% year-to-date. But it's also at pretty high valuation levels. You know, if you use price earnings.
What does that mean?
Price earnings ratio is a common way that we value things. Usually PE ratios range from 12 to 22, 16 is average. We're at about 17, 18 price earnings ratios. So things are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we need higher earnings or lower prices in order to get back to average.
Yeah. So you're skittish about the market, even though some experts out there are saying, hey, this is the strongest global expansion since the financial meltdown of 2008. Right now, it's time to climb the mountain.
Who says it's going to keep going up from here, though? You're buying it at pretty high prices.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably want to employ some strategies, you know, just in case we run into another 20% correction, which is a real correction, not 11%.
And you mentioned strategies. You're talking about what?
Dollar cost averaging is a common strategy.
Which means?
You buy a little bit every once in a while over time. So
as the prices fluctuate.
Yes. So we just had a client sell a house, $450,000+, and we need to get that invested. Well, we're going to take at least a year to get that invested and buy a little bit every month.
Mm-hmm. Just to average it out a little bit. Yeah.
Yes.
David, what are you talking to your clients about when it comes to the market? What's the David Jackson round of advice?
Well, there's two things going on, which you kind of alluded to. So we've gone for a long period of time where the market really hasn't had a major correction, which makes you think we're kind of due for one, or a bigger one than what we just went through. But then you also talked about the global expansion, which is real. You know, the economy is hitting on all four cylinders, so to speak, when you look at all the rest of the world all growing well at the same time. So we could have some correction short term, but the trend long term overall is still pretty good. So, you know, I'm still talking to my clients about being diversified. You know, because of the global expansion, I'm talking to them a little bit more about international as part of their mix, because a lot of the rest of the world is growing faster economically than the United States is now. And I'm not telling them to go all in with stocks, maybe have some money in some things that are a little bit safer in case we do go through some choppiness here in the near future.
How interested are our listeners in investing in the market right now? What's your advice? What are you doing? 816-235-2888 is our number, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Barbara, what are you doing on this front?
One of the interesting things that we've been doing is the stock market had an exceptional year last year, and we have, as we're rebalancing clients' portfolios, we are taking stock off the table, because if somebody wants a portfolio that's maybe 65% stock and 35% bonds,
right,
stocks have gone up so much that they're no longer 65%. They're 70%. Mm-hmm. They're 72%. And that's almost a tough sell. You go to a client and say, you have too much in stock. I want to take some of your profit off the table and invest it in things that are less volatile. And they'll say, you want to reduce the stock market?
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of in disbelief. And you go through the, as David says, the diversification. This was your goal. We're going to stick to the goal. The 10% correction, frankly, was helpful in communicating the fact that things don't go up
forever. This is what can happen, is what the message is.
What's supposed to happen.
But I think I was really struck when a dear 82-year-old client of mine called one day and said, can you believe that stock market? And I said, pretty impressive, isn't it? It's probably a good thing you don't have any money in the stock market? She goes, I think I need some.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, my goodness, we've hit that greed cycle. You know, she does not belong in the stock. I think I put 10% of her money in the stock market.
Yeah.
And it'll give her something to watch, and it will make her happy. But
So emotion and greed become factors here that you guys need to keep a close eye on.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, what's funny is you can have telephone calls in one day that exemplify both. So you can have somebody who, you know, you have a meeting and they want to put more money in the stock market because it's done so well and look at my performance numbers from last year. And then you can have someone else who says, you know, we are, you know, what, 9 years out, the longest, you know, bull market that we've had so far. And I really think, you know, I want to go, you know, pull the horns way back in. But then you bring up what David said is, you know, the portfolios that most financial planners work with have a mixture of low risk and high risk investments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you do diversify here in the U.S. and overseas, you know, so it's
an assumption that something will go on forever, David.
That's the sad thing.
That's
people get anchored
to,
if it's been happening for a while, it's going to continue to happen. And I've been having this conversation. I forget where I saw this term called FOMO, fear of missing out. That's been coming a lot from Bitcoin.
Right.
People are saying, people are getting rich off of Bitcoin. I don't want to miss that. So they want to jump in and not understand what they're doing. But, things do not just go on forever. And, you know, you have to understand that, you know, it's going to come back to reality eventually.
There's another truism here, Barbara. Bad decisions are made quickly. Good decisions are made slowly.
That's true. And it goes back to behavioral science. People are wired for that fight or flight, and so they see something exciting and they move toward it. They want it. They want to be a piece of that action. But things that scare them, I don't know. It's difficult to explain, but the better decisions are ones where it's certainly good that you're paying attention, and when something comes quickly, you have noticed it, but you should take time and think it through, because science studies show that those are the decisions that make more sense and are actually better, higher quality decisions for
you. So in 2008, we had this devastating financial meltdown. How long did it take for the market to recover what it had lost in the wake of that incredible meltdown? It was 5 or 6 years, wasn't it, at least?
I want to say
Is there a number?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it did come back. It's the big, big picture, you know, because people who panicked, you know, I remember having a client that called me early March of 2009, said, I can't take it anymore. You know, I'm moving all my money to cash. You're not my financial advisor anymore. I give up. And by the third week in March is when the market started to recover and dramatically recovered.
Yeah.
So if she would have stayed in, you know, most of the losses, good 60, 70% of her losses, she would have recovered by the end of that year, she missed out on it.
But I can remember looking at my 401k balance at that time.
Yeah, it was scary, wasn't it?
Holy moly.
Yes,
it was scary. Yeah. So much had gone and evaporated into thin air.
I mean, it's almost like being in the middle of a storm or a tornado or something. In the middle of it, you don't know how long it's going to last. So it is so scary. And once it's over, you can look back and it's like, well, it wasn't so bad, or maybe it was, but, you know, looking back is a whole lot easier than when you're in the middle of it. You just don't know when it's going to end.
So, Sandy, time horizons become an important thing here. And what would you say about that idea?
If you're looking at a portfolio, an account, a bucket that is being saved for retirement, you know, you're going to be saving for that decades. You know, if you're in your 30s, obviously decades. Even if you're in your 50s, you probably have one or two decades before you're going to start withdrawing it. And even if you're age 67 and you start withdrawing it, you know, that bucket of investments stays around through life expectancy. So life expectancies are another 30 to 40-year time span. So, so retirement money really has a long time to go. So you can afford to be more aggressive than that. And you do need growth in that. So it probably needs a higher percentage of high-risk investments like stocks. If you're looking at things you're going to need soon, like college, you may need college money in 5 years. If you're looking at a bucket of money that you have allocated for a car purchase, that may come out in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So all of that dictates the kind of investments you use. The shorter the time horizon, the safer the investment, the less fluctuation you want in price.
And who could, and financial advisors, Barbara, can help you navigate that, right? Again, help you take the emotion out of what we're talking about here.
I think they can. And sometimes I relate it to the difference between having your mother tell you something, they're just too close to you, than having an objective stranger who's qualified. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just listen better to an outside voice if you know that person has the expertise.
Yeah, so often you're at a cocktail party, Dave, and somebody says, hey, boy, if I got a deal for you, this is going great, and you walk out thinking, once again, I've missed it, or I should think about going
missing
there,
out.
Right?
It sounds sexy, but you know what we try to advise people is diversify. You know, it's not quite as sexy, but it's a time-tested, true way of reaching some success.
Mm-hmm. Another rule: know why you own something, Sandy Weaver. Why is that important?
It's important to understand where you have your money. So Bitcoin is a great example. You know, if you don't understand Bitcoin and yet you've invested in it, why, that should be throwaway money then at that point. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand, you know, why you have that investment in Bitcoin. But let's say that you have bought stock in a company and you've researched that company and you feel strongly that it has good fundamentals and good growth prospects. That's a good decision. And you continue to monitor it. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you have a mutual fund. And again, that you pull research on that two or three times a year and you read the analyst opinions on that mutual fund, say it's in large cap stocks and it still has good ratings, still has a good management team. You know why you have your money there.
Mm. So where can you go to find that information?
Well, you can go to Morningstar.com. That's a very common third-party research. They're out of Chicago. They review mutual funds, ETFs, sub-accounts inside annuities. There's a retail version. There's a professional version. You know, that's one. Value Line is another one. They're out of New York, I believe. Mm-hmm. They also have research on mutual funds and company stocks.
Mm-hmm. And let me chime in on the knowing why you own something. So let's just say your child is young and you get an aggressive mutual fund for them for college.
Right.
And it's doing really, really well. It's done really, really well over the years. And now you're 2-3 years out from them going to college. And it's still an aggressive mutual fund, which means that if we go through a correction, that's what's going to lose the money. So if that's for college, well, maybe now's the time to take some off the table, maybe shift it into something a little bit more conservative because I'm getting ready to use that money. So you really do need to understand, what is this money for and when am I using it?
I bet that's a fairly common kind of thing too, right?
Oh, it actually
people
is.
People not handling their college money, right? They're staying in the market too long.
Yeah.
And then
I got a perfect example, a young man that happened to. You know, the year before he was ready to go to college, we had the market crash of 2008 and he thought he had college covered and he didn't.
Okay, let me go to a phone call here. Turner from, I'm not sure where Turner's from. Turner, welcome to the show. You there?
Hello?
Hi, is it Timothy or Turner?
Tim.
Tim, hi, welcome. Yeah. Go quickly, Tim.
Yeah, thank you. I love the show. I just retired and uh, I I have no debt, no credit card or car loan or anything except my mortgage. And I was wondering, I have enough money in savings to pay off the house or, you know, just continue with my investments. I'm kind of torn between that, either pay off my house and that way I have no debt at all. My investments do a lot better than my mortgage interest rate. I noticed that on my I have Vanguard and they have.
Okay, Tim, I got to cut you off. So investing or paying off the mortgage, Sandy, what would you advise?
A lot of taxpayers are going to be filing standard deduction in the future because the standard deduction has gone up so much. They will not itemize and they won't need that mortgage interest expense. He should take a look at his Schedule A and see if he's going to fall into that. I suspect he might. Most people are. And so it might make sense to pay off the mortgage.
We'll have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank our smart money experts, David Jackson with Waddell & Reed, Sandy Weaver, Petrovic Weaver Financial Services, and Barbara McMahon of Innovest Financial Partners over in Brookside. Thank you all very much. Sure appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, we take a look at the love affair between people and the cities where they live, and we'll get one man's reflections on growing up in Western Kansas. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.